It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Hello and welcome back to Eco Talk. On today's program, hearings yesterday on allegations of political interference by the Bush administration. Some heavy hitters from both sides took the stand, including Dr. James Hansen from NASA and Philip Cooney on behalf of the not-so-green White House. Grist Magazine's David Roberts keeps running commentary on these blow-by-blows, and he wrote about it at grist.org, and he's going to be joining us in a few minutes to explain why he thinks the reactionaries won this round. Stop climate change or die. That's the new motto from citizens of New Hampshire. They've adopted something that is really making history as they adopt town hall meeting legislation to go above and beyond what the federal government is doing or not doing to fight climate change. And guess what? Now the politicians want in, too. Former Republican state representative and co-chair of the State Carbon Coalition, Ted Leach, will tell us about the grassroots green print that all states should copy, people making their voices heard and politicians heeding the call. And finally, the Army Corps of Engineers was once one of our nation's most reputable military services, using an incredibly accomplished staff to protect us from natural disasters and helping to build our nation's industrial infrastructure. Until, that is, Hurricane Katrina hit. Now everyone agrees that the Corps needs to return to its former glory, but as the National Wildlife Federation's David Conrad will tell us, that does not mean our representatives from both parties need to be stuffing bills with pork. Well, that helps no one, nor did yesterday's hearings, according to our first guest, David Roberts of Grist Magazine. Well, last week it was Valerie Plame and Henry Waxman leading those hearings. That got a lot of attention. This week, not quite so much, at least not yet, on climate change. What was your impression of what you saw and heard?
Well, it was a political circus going under the guise of a scientific circus. And I think that way of framing things, trying to pretend that we're arguing about science when what we're actually arguing about is policy, that way of framing things helps the conservatives.
In fact, there was a lot of ideological talk. It sounded much more than ecological talk. So it was ideological exclusively, mostly, or partially?
Well, the beginning part of the hearing focused on some of these specific examples of Philip Cooney, the chief of staff at the White House Council of Environmental Quality, some of the specific edits he suggested to executive branch reports on climate change and climate science. And there was a lot of back and forth trying to pin him down and get him to admit that he was overturning scientific judgments. But, of course, in every case, he had some bit of expression of uncertainty in some science report to point to. So what ended up happening is, in all those specific cases, Cooney just lawyered Waxman et al. To death, and it became very boring very quickly, not only for those watching, but for the committee itself. And so soon enough, talk turned to policy, turned to the perfidy of the Bush administration, turned to the political pressures on staffers. It turned to politics, which is really, honestly, what it was always about.
Well, in fact, there's one quote here where Waxman said to Mr. Cooney, "All your edits certainly seem to be pushing in one direction toward increased uncertainty." And Cooney replied, "I aligned the communications with the administration's stated policy." Isn't that pretty damning in and of itself?
Well, it looks damning. That's what Waxman was after, is something that looked damning. I mean, I think that Cooney actually had a fairly good response to that, which is that the report in question overwhelmingly endorsed the scientific majority position that climate change is happening, human beings play a big role, and it's a problem. And Cooney's edits were just around the margins on a few tiny sections of that report. So if you look at the report as a whole, it is scientifically fairly respectable. It is true that all those edits are intended to highlight uncertainties, but it's no secret, is it, that the administration's political position on this is we need to stamp out the remaining uncertainties before we take any action, because action could have enormous economic consequences and could cripple the economy. I you know, I want to be very clear here. I disagree with that political position, but it's a political position. It's not a position on the science.
That's the point, that they're supposed to be, you know, writing about science and not politics.
Well, it's an executive branch report that mixes a report on the best science with an expression of how great a challenge it is or how big a problem it is or how soon action needs to be taken. I mean, this is endemic in the climate area, is that science and policy get run up together. Mm-hmm. And it's not only the Bush administration that does it. Almost everybody involved, Democrats, Greens, everybody, conflates science and policy in these matters. So, I mean, my point is, the Bush administration political position on climate is, I think, misguided and should be attacked as such with an alternative political position. What I think Democrats and a lot of Greens want to do is they're clinging on to this illusion that if they can just win the scientific debate and force the other side to once and for all admit, okay, the science is the science, that then they win and the battle's over. But that's just not so.
And as evidence of that, Nancy Pelosi, some feel, is starting to weaken a little bit on, or at least lower expectations about what we can hope to see in far as leadership on climate change legislation.
Well, I think what she's quickly finding out is that a real federal-level substantial climate policy is an extraordinarily complicated beast, and there are lots of very interested stakeholders, and her extremely ambitious targets for getting legislation out would have required superhuman political acts, which, you know, even this Congress, with all its energy and excitement, is probably not capable of mustering.
But if anyone should understand the political climate there, pardon the expression, it would be Nancy Pelosi. I mean, she's not new at the top, just a little higher this time.
Well, I think what she's doing is moving back some deadlines. I mean, I think her original deadlines, she said, were always about getting the process started. And I think there is going to be legislation passed here and there about efficiency standards for appliances, things like that, things around the margins. The big sticking point is the cap and trade bill. That's what everybody's focusing on, and that, I think, is going to take quite a bit of time to hash out, because John Dingell, who runs the Energy and Commerce Committee, refuses to be hurried on that subject, despite Pelosi's many attempts to hurry him.
What do you think? What's your take on the fact that some are saying it's a strategic move to save the big stuff for 2008, when there's a better political climate for global warming legislation, and they're just trying to trot out the smaller stuff on purpose, not that anyone is, you know, sort of chickening out?
Well, I think that's a debate worth having, whether that's a good strategic move. But from my discussions with people involved in Congress in this stuff, I don't think that that's their attitude at all. I think everybody up there, you know, with the exception of Dingell, everybody up there is committed to getting something done this session.
And more than something, perhaps quite a few pieces of legislation, because there's no time to spare. And I think you're right. I think that is generally the perception from those people that we're counting on.
Right.
So tell us about the big news this week will be Al Gore's testimony. What should we look for?
Well, it will be interesting to see what tack he takes. I mean, I'm sure some of it will just be his standard stump speech. You know, it's a problem. It's a moral problem. We've got to mobilize. I think the reason that political observers will be watching it with great anticipation is that they think that Gore's approach will reveal something about his future intentions with regard to whether he's going to run or not. He keeps saying he's not going to run for president, so I think the idea is, watch him testify. If he proposes big, sweeping, fundamental solutions that are, at least in today's political climate, impossible, that I think will be a pretty clear indication that he's decided not to run. Whereas, if he trims his sails a little bit and just sort of pushes for a stronger cap-and-trade bill or other bills like that around the margins, that might be an indication that he still wants to stay in the game and is still thinking about jumping in. So,
well, that's interesting to watch. I hope that's not too much of a distraction for people. I hope they don't just focus on Al Gore's political intentions and really the message of what he's saying about climate change and the urgency there.
Well, his message is, I think, well out now. I'm not sure this congressional hearing will get it out any farther than his blockbuster movie and series of rock concerts.
Right, but remember in that movie last time he was before Congress talking about climate change, how we thought everything would change and it didn't. So hopefully there'll be a different reaction this time.
Let's hope.
And we hope you stay with us as we continue our conversation with David Roberts of Grist Magazine. You're listening to EcoTalk.